Well, that would be nice. So we're going to go over specifically the 9 most important things you can do now to optimize your online presence. So I'll give you guys some resources. Every time you go through one of the things, we'll train you something. You can go out and learn a little bit more. If anything piques your interest, we'll put a Q&A. And of course, you get to see me wearing big boy clothes, which I've already gotten about a dozen comments on, because I usually traipse around looking like that. So, that being said, I hope everybody is ready to mine. You guys see the slides okay, by the way, because I have lots of slides today. That was the example. It is in the
yeah. Underrated movie.
The black one.
Oh, yeah.
Okay, so, I was going to let you know how to make mine. I need some blood. Okay, so we're going to start off. First of all, responsive design. How many of you in here have heard of responsive design? How many of you in here surf web on your phone or your Kindle or some device other than your laptop or your desktop? Now, do many of you have websites? Are you marketing or driving on business right now? Is your site optimized at this point for those type of screens, type of devices? Responsive design is how you do that. So, for example, I will pick out some brands and some websites today. I'm not trying to pick on any one person. These are just random websites that I found that weren't optimized, basically. So, here's USA Triathlon's website, and here's what it looks like on a mobile browser. And that's an example of design that's not only not responsive, but isn't directing me to a mobile version. And there is a difference between responsive design and a mobile optimized website, and I'll get into that in a second. Here's an example. This is kingarthurflower.com. They do a really kick butt job on responsive design, because if you go to their site on a mobile browser, or this is an iPhone, you can look at it on my Kindle or an iPad or whatever, their site automatically changes depending on the device that you use. And this isn't a mobile version of their site. You can see up here, some sites that you go to, if it's a mobile version, it will say, for example, m.kingarthurflower.com. This is the same website, but it's just a responsive design that changes based off your device. This is my coaching website. This is what it looks like in a desktop. This is what it looks like. It basically just spills everything into a view that you can digest when you're looking at it on the browser. The difference between this and an app or a mobile site is with an app that's presenting your content, whether you're using it for marketing, that's something somebody has to download, it's something they have to update, and you have to teach users to do that and bring them in and actually get them to download the app. Whereas with responsive design, it's not an app they don't have to download, it's not a mobile site, and when it's not a mobile site, what that means is that any analytics, customer reviews, all the things that you're trying to collect, everything's split up between a mobile version and an iPad version and a desktop version. It all just goes through one portal. So responsive design is a really cool way to design a site. It's not an app, it's not a mobile site. And this is kind of a clunky example. You can have a website that has, for example, retailer.com runs this, but they've got retailer.com, and then you can go to e.retailer.com if you're on a tablet, you can go to n.retailer.com if you're on a mobile. But that, in my opinion, is a little bit clunkier way to do things. And you just have your website optimized for responsive design. It's super easy to do. I use WordPress for a lot of my websites, which is kind of like a blog-based platform. Anybody in here use WordPress, use your company's blog, anything like that? You can kind of sort of get after this by just putting a couple of plugins on your WordPress page. One is called WP Touch. It makes stuff look really nice in phones. One's called OnSwipe. It makes stuff look really good on Apple, iPad, stuff like that. But that's kind of the way you can take a little step for response design. It's certainly one thing that's going to be more popular in 2013. Going to a website and being able to see it rendered differently on different devices without your user actually having to download an app or go to a mobile version of the site. It's super easy to do. You can Google responsive design. You can also go to this resource. This is one that I really like when I have a website set up. If I've got a WordPress blog or a sales site or something like that someone set up for me, I can go here to this website and basically take a look at what it looks like on a Kindle or an iPhone or an iPad or anything else. It allows me to take a quick look at all the different browsers. Like when I had my site designed for responsive design, I was able to see that it was really good in a bunch of websites that were properly fit. And we could see that right away by using this resource. That's a good resource, and by the way, you don't have to write super seriously because I'll make all these slides available to you guys. I'll just put them up on the website, and you can go download them and access them if you want to write them. These things on the URLs. I'll also record this for you too if you want to play Axel. So number two is lead generation. And this sounds like a really simple concept, but I think this is all through sports. It's Nitro. So this is Nitro's homepage. And their lead gen tool in terms of getting a customer to actually supply their email address so they can build their brand. Because really, if you're going to sell to someone, you have to present to them, I don't know what it is, 5 times, 10 times, 7 times, whatever, you have to get your message in front of them multiple times. And if they land on your website and then navigate away, you don't necessarily know that they're going to come back unless you're running like retargeting ads or something like that. We'll talk about that in a second. But you want to collect their information, their email address. This is an example of a page where the email address not only was slightly below the fold, meaning you had to scroll down to get it, but it's not very apparent. Something that's a little bit more in your face works better. Similar here. I mean, this is a great site, tells great stuff. But in terms of the mailing list, it's down here, and there's no reason for me to subscribe. I don't even know what I'm getting there. You know, there's no free book, there's no audio download, white paper, email discount, anything like that. This is a website that's doing a pretty good job. Anybody ever work with Google.com? Great site, like stuff. But up here, fairly more in your face, you can get a free $8 voucher you put here, and you can sign up for the email newsletter. This is above the fold. It kind of follows where the eyes track from left to right when they first land on the site. And it's a good place. It doesn't have to be a cheesy pop-up or something like that. It's like going right in front of your face and blocks the website, which is a lot of kind of cheesy and marketing that I do. But you want something when you have, this is my site, where when you write on someone's page, it's a big deal here. You can click get a free book, and you got to put your email address to get that book. This is another example. In this example, this is really cool. I'll show you guys how to do this. Any video on your website, and I have this on all the videos on my website now. After you get 5 seconds into the video, 10 seconds into the video, whatever you want it to be, if you've got training videos on your website, product videos on your website, anything, someone can get to the first few seconds of the video, and then they're forced to opt in to watch the rest of the video. That works really well too. That's a very inexpensive plugin called Meet Player that I use. And I went into all the videos I've ever put on my website, put that in. And I literally get 5,400 options a day just by people clicking on videos, trying to watch the video, putting their name and email address, trying to finish watching the video. That's a really good way to get things as well. It's just an example of what it looks like. This is, was one I was running on a membership website where people have to opt in to be able to access some of the free videos. So, a few tips for lead gen. You want an ethical bribe, meaning you want to give somebody a reason actually signing up. It can be a savings pack like you saw with Wiggle, or it's like a $8 voucher. It can be a white paper, which to me sounds really boring, but some companies like to do something like that. PDF, I use ebooks a lot, those work really well. Video downloads, like I showed you, audio downloads. You want to make sure that it doesn't just say subscribe to our newsletter, because people just go to newsletter blind. People have too many newsletters showing up in their email inbox. The example I just showed you on my video was a good example of this, but email only versus name plus email, you can get higher opt-ins most of the time if you go email only. And a lot of times people are just putting fake names or whatever anyway, not putting their name, and then we market to them via your email newsletter that you've got tied to that autoresponder. They get the email, and then put it on you for a year, or your email, or either way, you have to write an inbox email. So you don't have to ask them a name. It can be just their email. A lot of times you get higher opt-ins if you go email only. And then the pop-up thing that I talked about, I'm not a big fan of throwing like pop-ups, especially on the e-commerce side, if you're doing like direct consumer, just because it annoys people, it bothers them, leaves them with bad taste in mouth a lot of the time. So I still have a few websites that I floated around out there that have pop-ups on them, but I'm trying to kind of lean them out because pop-ups are annoying. But it is a way that you'll see a lot of those trying to collect opt-ins. So once you've got your opt-in kind of sorted on your site, there are multiple ways you can build your list. I use one, shopping carts, MailChimp is another good service, Constant Contact is another service, but any of these sites will give you a form that you can put into your autoresponder box to be able to build your list out. So all my different sites have different segmented lists associated with each one. So I can target to a triathlon list, I can target to a personal trainer list, I can target to a triathlon business list, whatever, with emails, and any of these sites will be segmented your list as well. There are some other lead gen tools I'll tell you guys about later on in the talk, like blogs, podcasts, even how to build a text messaging list, which I've been doing a lot of. Those are other ways that you can go above and beyond just having email that you send to people in terms of delivering content. But make sure that you've got some kind of opt-in box and a way for people to, way for you to generate leads. Really good resource. Like, I have specific people that I follow, or websites that I use for really good ideas about stuff like this. Leadbrite developed that video plugin that I showed you called LeadPlayer, so that lets you collect names and email addresses. Leadbrite is a really good resource to get that stuff. So check that one out. And the next thing is social media. This is Rev3 Triathlon's website, and you can see they're using Google+, they're using Twitter, they've got a like button up there, and you know, if you were to follow them on any of these platforms, they do a pretty good job using them as well. If we go to, for example, this is Challenge Family's Challenge Triathlon website, there's really not a whole lot going on there in terms of social media. You know, from a race director standpoint, I think there's a lot being left on the table as far as building a lot of people talking about your brand, liking your brand, sharing your brand, etc. When a page looks like this, they also have to get rid of those Google AdWords ads inside there. But basically, you know, that's an example of a race website that does well and one that doesn't do it quite so well. You might even know some of your challenge fans as well. Cool. This is Joe Polish's Twitter page. It's a cool Twitter page. You can get a free recorded message. He's building his brand. You know, he's got his websites listed here. You can't click on Twitter profile, but they're there, which is useful. There's a message here to follow in, and you see what you get. You get barriers to success interview free when you follow Joe Polish. And this is a really good way to set up a Twitter page if you are a brand or if you're a celebrity, an athlete, whatever. Andy Fox, great talk today, by the way, but his Twitter page isn't quite as optimized. There's a lot of real estate where he could be building his brand here, he could be building his brand here. Like I'm using a website for all my Twitter page design, page website called Fiverr.com. People use that for $5. I've had Twitter pages designed that people have bid for me on email for ODAS and $400 to $500 to do a custom Twitter page. They pay for $5 on Fiverr.com. I get voiceovers from working with stuff on that too. So that's an example of a less good Twitter page. Here's an example of a Facebook page. This one, for example, is my Facebook page. And even though Facebook has kind of changed and stuff in terms of you being able to engage fans, you know, like collect email addresses with people around your site, stuff like that. Here's an example where people can click the welcome tab and get a free video from me. If you were to click that welcome tab, you get a $20 coupon to use on my website, coaching, supplements, or anything like that, if you share it with 5 friends, my Facebook page. So it's kind of a cool little way to build a Facebook page. But it gets people interacting. I also got my list on here, which I'll talk about in a second, as another good way to kind of build your brand and use social media. I've got a way for people to refer a friend, but that's an example of the way that a Facebook page can be set up, the way that Facebook is running right now. You know, I don't know if it'll look like this a year from now, they're always changing stuff. The reason I use this website is I just typed in tracking coach in my browser and pulled up the first Facebook page that came up. But this, you know, this page is less interactive. I don't really know the folks at D3 Multisport, but you know, you can see how we can optimize a Facebook page versus kind of have something that isn't so interactive with the person who's looking at the page. So a few of the things that I found social media to be good for, the ways that I use it, I run a Google+ page, and I use that for mini blogging. I mini blog at people who maybe blog for me, but little tiny 200, 300 word snippets, couple articles that are too short to be published on the website. Stuff like that, people tend to interact with really well on the Google+ platform. Facebook is good for stuff that people are going to interact with, and that's really going to help your brand show up on more news feeds as well, running polls, contests, photo contests. There's a bunch of stuff you can use Twitter for or Facebook for, and I kind of geeked out on some of this in last year's talk. I'll give you guys a slide for last year's talk, too, in terms of the stuff that I went over as far as like how to use each one of these. Twitter's good for questions, like throwing a question out there to your audience, to your followers. It's good for responding and solving problems for people quickly. It's good for short conversations. I know Rock Light is a Pinterest stuff here, but it's my list, but the way that he expands my list to me with that is like Pinterest or Facebook. So anyways, though, places where you can discover stuff and share things like Pinterest, things like my list, these are really good ways to put together lists, share things, get other people to interact with lists. I'll show you a good example of that in a second. But make sure that when you're throwing up these type of pages that you're being active, because a really good way to turn somebody off on your brand is to link around your Twitter page and see posts like your last week was a month ago, 2 months ago. So be active. And there are ways that you can do that. I'll show you a tool that I use for a lot of this. Like here's an example of a brand Tide, they're not a brand in triathlon. But if you go to Tide's My List page, they've done a really good job creating helpful things for customers, creating ways that customers can interact with them. They're even doing some e-commerce there. So, you know, there's a lot of cool ways that you can use social media like this. You know, call them My List on your Facebook page, Google Plus, Twitter, Facebook. A lot of that stuff I know many of you already have, but you need to make sure that's optimized as well. Some of the ways that I showed you. So I manage 7 Twitter accounts, 8 Facebook pages, 2 LinkedIn profiles, some Tumblr, some YouTube, Google Plus, and a few other social media outlets. I use Hootsuite for managing that, and I also have a couple of VAs who go in and do some tweets for me or schedule stuff for me. I don't have time to tweet my good and actually not unsure about computer tweeting. But Hootsuite is really, really good at this kind of stuff. Now, I use a resource called socialmediaexaminer.com. That's one of my favorite websites in terms of like a blog, but it does a really good job saying about this stuff. It's telling you new tools come out, new resources come out, which social media outlets are really, really good for new marketing on, how to market on them, videos and articles, stuff like that. Socialmediaexaminer.com. Because there's a lot of social media websites out there, but that's a good one. One that I like to follow and watch all that stuff. So content is king. I talked about this last year. The content is still king. It works really, really well. Most of my business, most of my customers, most of the stuff that I sell online is all built via content-based marketing. So here's an example of great content-based marketing. I mean, when you're looking for keywords on Google, a lot of times, especially in our industry, you'll see articles popping up in the first 10 results linking into active.com because they've done a really good job producing a ton of content. And they're producing it on a regular basis. Great example of how to use content regularly. In their case, this is a blog-based platform that they use, but there's many ways you can churn out articles. For me, I don't do a ton of blogging on my coaching page, but I have a separate blog, personal blog, and I just link to it from my coaching and my e-commerce page. And that's another way that you can do things, is your blog except from your website. You can also do that. Here's an example. I just went to another random website because I saw some railroads here this week. And as I went through their website, it didn't seem like there was a lot of content on it in terms of people discovering that brand through an article that they read on the internet. And I looked for a surveillance blog too, I couldn't find it. They might have one. But there are a lot of brands out there that just don't blog. They don't have articles regularly featured on the site. And there's a lot of traffic left on the page. I mean, if you have a helpful blog post, like Drybike versus Drobike, even if you're not a direct-to-consumer brand and selling through a local bike shop, you're still going to drive a lot of interest to your brand versus another brand who's not actually providing helpful articles, helpful content. But I think there's a lot of money being left on the table for content marketing. It's just a matter of getting someone to produce. I mean, like a company like Savela could have, for example, a bicycling podcast. That's another example of a place that they could be marketing through additional like blog, YouTube channel, those type of things. So, you can see on this page, there's really none of that in terms of consumer education for site marketers. So, look at your site, see if you've got helpful content for people. The best place to start, really, how many of you are running an e-commerce site and have blogs on your site? Not, not too many folks. Have a blog. So I would create a blog and link to it from your site, but better yet, better SEO, have a blog on your site. Make sure it's syndicated, meaning that you're regularly producing and releasing content, even if it's just like 400, 500, 800 words, whatever. It ranks really, really high in search engines when you're regularly producing content. Make sure that it's original and unique, that you will get pinged by search engines if you've got an article and it's appearing in that same form on another website. There are some spin engines that you can use to produce an article and make several variations of that article that you can blast it out to a bunch of different websites, and that can help with that issue. But make sure that you're not just recycling the content from somewhere else and featuring on your blog. And then, of course, be helpful. Make sure that you're actually solving problems with your blog posts and not just producing like Wikipedia back pages. Automated article distribution. These are the spin sites that I just got to talk about. Two that I use are socialmonkey.com and uniquearticlewizard.com. So, for example, with uniquearticlewizard.com, I can churn out an article and then have assistance for myself. I can go in and take the six different paragraphs that are in that article, use Unique Article Wizard to turn that into basically several hundred different articles that get blasted to a bunch of blogs. That it automatically adds SEO to them. I can link some of the articles from my own blog. That's a really good way to syndicate content you've created if you want to make sure that content gets distributed over and over and over. It doesn't defeat actually having your own content on your website. It's just a little way that you can maximize the articles that you're producing. Physical article distribution, going to sites, or having someone who works for your brand going to sites and physically submitting articles, developing a relationship with sites that are regularly producing articles. Like, I can write articles for triathlon.about.com because I'm a pro then and ask to write articles for them. And so, you know, once a month I have a reminder that pops up on the computer that tells me to go produce your article for about.com. Same thing with acme.com. I push that through wellspear.com, easy articles. There are other industry blogs and industry news sites that you can form relationships with, but this is not stuff that like an article spinner will do for you. This is real hands-on work that you just need to approach. Content distributing websites, get your articles out there. There's a huge amount of traffic that'll come back to you when you do this. VA stands for virtual assistant, meaning that you don't have to do a lot of this kind of hands-on work. You can, like I pay people anywhere from $4 to $6 an hour kind of program virtually to do a lot of this kind of physical stuff. And then I went over a bunch of content stuff on last year's slides, which I'll make available to you guys at the end of this talk. Copywater.com is what I use to get a ton of writing inspiration and learn how to craft articles so that people read them, learn how to optimize them for search engines, learn how to just create really helpful stuff that people like. That's the number one resource that I use when I'm creating a title for an article, when I'm deciding how I'm going to break up an article, present it, everything like that. That's a really good website for you or whoever's working for your brand to use to kind of learn how to do it the right way. So that's a great resource. Okay, so number five is podcasting. How many of you in here podcast? Yes, podcast, of course. Competitive radio. I love that. Podcasting is a really, really good way to get your message out. Lots of people, especially in our industry, because they're on biking or running or have underwater MP3 players or swimming, they're listening to stuff a lot. And if your brand is a podcast, it's going to help out. I actually don't recommend your brand have a podcast. I recommend that person from your brand have a podcast. Like if you can have a personality behind your podcast, it works a lot better than just having, available podcasts. Devices that have podcasts that have often available. The better way to use your personality behind your brand. Like I'm a personality brand vendor for this podcast. Tony Krazak is the personality brand for Planet. Harry Sullivan and I are the personality brand for Rockstar Crafting Podcast. But podcasting is really growing. If you look at the stats, nearly 3 in 10 Americans have ever listened to an audio podcast, or nearly 3 in 10 Americans have ever listened to an audio podcast. You can see since 2006 that the numbers are climbing in terms of the percentage of people who are downloading stuff for free on iTunes and who are available for you to push content out to an audio medium. There's a lot of consumer education and marketing that's left on the table with podcasts. This is my Get Fit Guy podcast. I just downloaded the January number of episodes a few days ago. So I produced 4 episodes. and had over $250,000 or almost $250,000 downloads from four episodes. So that's $250,000 people who are listening to my message in 1 month that might not have visited a blog, that might not have read, that might not have watched a video. But this is a really, really good way to push your message out to the audience. And it's super easy to set up. The way that I set up all my podcasts is I just have a blog, which is basically free. Start a blog. I use a plugin called PowerPress, which basically lets you embed an audio file on any of my articles that I write. And you can go to benbriefflips.com to see how I do this. I use Libsyn to host my audio files. I don't use Amazon. Amazon charges you for the number of downloads that you get, whereas Libsyn charges you the upfront upload cost. And if you get really popular and lots of people are downloading your stuff, you start to pay a lot of money to be I use a service called Libsyn, most of my stuff. PowerPress, the cool thing about this is it will automatically push stuff out to iTunes. It makes it super easy. It comes with this like easy 1, 2, 3 instructions to be able to just push your stuff straight to iTunes. You can literally be up in a day. I like a good mic. People are valuing good audio more and more these days. I use a Rode podcasting mic. So, those are the only things I use. There's a really good resource out there, though, that you can use for podcasting. It's at blogroll.com/podcastingebook, and it's like a free, you got to log in for it, but it's a free 75-page ebook that just goes into nitty-gritty details of everything you ever need to know about setting up your podcast. And it's really good. Like, it's written by Daniel Clark. I mean, that's a good podcast. It's really, really talking about. But if you grab that and give it to whatever member of your team, if you're doing a podcast, you read yourself, great resource. Okay, next up is targeted ads. And this would be as opposed to non-targeted ads or something like the AdWords that you saw in the challenge website that I showed you earlier. So here are some hotspot screenshots, the red parts of being where people's eyes really tend to fall, the gray parts being where people don't really tend to track at all on the screen, and green squares being the ads. So as you can see, I mean, this again kind of returns to the content thing that we talked about, but if you're paying to get ads in places like this, unless they're actually targeted ads, and I'll show you what I mean by that in a second, there's a lot of ad blindness going on. Because people are going up, seeing the screen, getting all these horrible banners on their face, not being people, now they're even seeing here, if you're paying for it. So, I went to a couple websites a few days ago. So I was at a website called Onnit.com like 2 weeks ago. And when I went to Everyman Tribe to read this article, How to Run an Olympian, Onnit.com's banner is showing to me right here. And somehow Everyman Tribe magically knows that I was at this website before. I think it happened to me before for an ad that followed me around the internet. That's one way you can overcome this ad banner blindness. By really targeting your ad to somebody. I'll show you how you can do that. It's called retargeting. It's like a retargeting fixture from your website. And then I went to Facebook. These are all sites that I've been at recently. But I was not serving any of the other websites. But these are all sites that I've been to recently, and these are all the ads that are showing to me in Facebook. So this is another example where the ad is targeted and it kind of overcomes some of that ad blindness. This also returns back to the concept where I mentioned you have to have that opt-in front and center on your website if you want to collect leads, because you've got to sell people over and over and over again. So maybe if I was telling you to meet up on for genetic testing, I might not have gotten it the first time. I might have just read about it, forgotten about it, and now that Facebook is calling me around, explaining that ad to me over and over and over again. We're on top of another example. So, Facebook is one really good place to advertise. You get super targeted with your ads on Facebook. I think it's easier to do with the Google AdWords campaign, even though there's a good resource that'll give you guys first if you want to do Google AdWords. But Facebook lets you choose everything from the person that fit in, their age, their friends, lots of stuff. And then you can get really, really specific. Like, I can target to a 40-50-year-old male crowd who's interested in Ironman triathlon. But you get super, super specific with that stuff. Websites with few banners. If I go to a really kickball website and it doesn't have any advertising or none at all. And it's one of those websites where you have like a blog or something where you have to kind of call somebody that has advertising on the site. Then that works really well also. But the site just doesn't have any advertising. Like I used to run stuff on everymanfry.com and before they started doing more and more banners. And I got a lot of traffic from that because I was like running banners on the site. So those retargeting pixels that follow you around the internet. There are sites that you can go to set up campaigns like that. The your brand is following someone around the internet after they arrive on your website. AdWords has that feature. There's a site called fetchback.com that offers that. There's a site called adroll.com that has that. Those are all websites that you can use. That's not that expensive to do. It's actually pretty easy to set up campaigns. I think it we might need like $500 ad monthly. We don't need to cover ad. Podcast placements. These work really well too. I get ads created for me. Like I use that website Fiverr.com to get $5 ad created for me. And I approach podcasters and have them play my audio ad on their podcast. And then give them affiliate commission who are coming back on my webpage and buying stuff. And they play ads. People that I get a specific coupon for like that ad, that podcast. And that works really well too. Basically getting your commercial, your brand as a podcast. So if you just saw that on podcast, and people are looking at it. So, you know, our industry is a lot of downloads. And you can get like sponsors for your podcast and stuff like that, but if you want to get other people's podcasts, you don't have your own, you can use that as a form of advertising. I don't know if anybody ever read the book Trust Me and Lying. That book delves into how manipulable the blog industry is. Like, how much they'll respond to you if you have a product, get in space, send an article, get in like a post. A lot of bloggers out there will post articles about your brand or help you out if you kind of scratch their back. And, you know, sending stuff. I mean, I've personally written lots of blog posts just based off the product that has been introduced to me by my house. And that's another really good way to kind of get your brand out and get presence. Literally, talk to a lot of bloggers for a good content. Really good resource for advertising, not just for AdWords advertising, but for all advertising. AskHowWe.com. If you go to AdWords for Dummies, and that's a really good book, but it's kind of outdated. But you've got a lot more up to date stuff on the website. You just want to learn kind of the idea and psychology behind that, how to put together, how to fit in. Just really useful website. It's really a good one if you want to get into running ads, buying ads, stuff like that. Okay, number 7 is conversation. Not many of you use slowpitch.com. I always wonder how many of you post on slowpitch. I post on slowpitch. I use that for conversation. Anyways, though, the reason I bring that up is I dealt in my analytics for this month. So I go to slowpitch like twice a month and just try to find something, post something helpful. I do that for a lot. So I've got like 20 different forms that I go to. I log in for a specific time during the month, so I'm not overloading myself. I just post something helpful, so respond to a question, and or engage in conversation with AOL, or just say something funny. But I had 102 visits to my website this month from social, and that might not sound like much, but once you start adding up a bunch of forums and you're having conversations on this, people are coming back to you from home, this is a really good way to build your brand. And you can see they're staying on my site for a minute. That doesn't seem like much, but a minute. Actually, it's really good. There's the amount of time that someone can develop out of the forum and spend it on your website after you talk to them. So, if you start engaging in that conversation with the forum, you can actually drive a lot of traffic back to your site. It's really important that you guys listen, starting with some of the forums that are out there that you can use, that are on forum, Interactive, Active, Slowpitch, obviously, Velsphere, Tripod, out there that you pay, too, and you pay. Fuel is a good forum, Runner's World has good forums. Training Piece has some forums and also it'll have a blog and comment on the blog in a second. Make sure that when you create your form signature, that it's really helpful and that it can move people out to your website. Like all you need in a form signature visually company for free. Like use that to override concept and then people go back to your website. Or also make it kind of like a lot of times go in and change my signature based off of the product concept or something that's happened recently on your website. Anytime you change the signature, you can use that as a way to drive people back to your website, even if your comment isn't getting indexed on You can also, because search engines will index a lot of discussions, you can run Google alerts on discussions. What I mean by that is if you've got a specific, here's a reminder to you to make sure about search. If you run a Google alerts on discussions, you can actually get alerts sent straight back to you that tell you that someone's discussing a specific topic you want. So I run a Google alerts discussion on my name because I want to know if people in forums are talking about me so that I can go in and build my brand, and myself, say something helpful, whatever the case may be. And I run Google discussion alerts on all my products as well. So all of those that are actually, so anytime somebody is talking about my brand, they know that. And that's a really good way to get in and drive to faster sites, or put out fires when people that are talking about your brand. So comments, blog comments are also another way that you can engage in conversation. So popular blogs you can go comment on, and you can also run discussions on your own website. On my blog, I have two different plugins installed that allow you to really, really talk to people, engage in conversation, and make sure when I'm talking to folks. Intense Debate is one plugin that I installed on my blog. Another one is Akismet, which blocks a lot of spam. There's a lot of spam comments out there, and that's one better example of the crappy stuff and showing up on the blog. And here are a bunch of blogs. These are just like popular triathlon blogs. I just listed a handful of them. There are other ones, but if you are not following these, and I'll show you how to follow them, you know, frequently when articles are published, you can be like the first comment that shows up, which is really helpful. Because if somebody's reading an article and making your comment, the first comment, that's good eyeball for you to interpret. But basically, any of these websites, there's a ton of other websites you can comment on. I don't recommend outsourcing comments. Many of you guys have a blog and have people comment on your website before. Some of those are spammers, some of those are virtual systems that people hire to go post comments on the blog and try to track them. I think that makes a difference. You or somebody in your team, intelligent, first of all, helpful to make comments on other popular blogs. So don't just use comments as a wide case. Or all the data. Make sure they pay really well for their comments. Be helpful and personal. Try to outsource the comments. So here's a resource that I use. I just use Google Feed Reader. The Google Feed Reader will show up directly on my browser when a new post is made on a popular website that I'm following. Right, it used to be really helpful to use a popular comments manager that was in the email or something like that. But the Feed Reader is kind of next step solution. So I can see whatever. Joe Freer. Really cool blog post about a topic that I know a lot about and I want to go through the questions. Right off the bat, if I happen to sit in front of my computer and make that post, I can go over to the website and be perfect for the comments. So FeedReader works really well for that if you happen to be kind of on the internet or sort of on the computer blog writing articles and stuff. It's a good way to top the line in terms of showing up like a comment. So the next thing is text messaging. And this is something I've actually been using quite a bit of for promoting events and selling products in terms of especially with dealing with stuff. They go out to customers via SMS text. A lot of people are texting on the phone. This is an example of Endurance Clients newsletter. Like people, when they arrive at EnduranceClients.com, they can text the word client to 42828, and what will happen is that will automatically opt them in to our Endurance Clients newsletter. So this is another example of the way you can build your list. And this is just an option that they have when you go to your platform. This is another thing that I'll do, is I have a box on my blog, my website, Ben Green for Fitness, where people can put in their phone number, and instead of getting more sleep, they text me. And this whole data rate takes place, but very few people opt out. Most people opt in to text me, but I don't know if they know how to reply to. They don't opt out. So SMS priority list works really well. I use mobility.com for this. There are other services out there, that's just one that I've been using. For example, you can text word fitness to 411-247. I don't know if anybody even wants to try it on a copy and see what happens. I mean, you can hit reply and check it out. But that's my testing. So if you test for bits, it's all from 127. You get a special message from me. It's into the link back to my website. You get a free book. It adds you to on my VIP list. And every week, every couple weeks, I send out a special email for the discount code. And people respond much better to that than they do to get a coupon code or discount code via email. So the funny part is, I'm welcome to call it. Hey, Ben. Really important, and you can use that event code. I've got an event coming up in Spokane where during that event, they just want people to text the word. I've got the same short code, people text a different word to my short code, and they can get up to date messages during the event as well. You're running a really, really big way to start to get texted to the number of people that text me. But that's another way you can go from the changes, super quickly right to the event, and let everybody know right away. You've got a special party or discount, somebody's there, that was really well. So tips, usually it's about 160 characters. This is really important. You do not want to be texting people links to your website. The your checkout page is not optimized for your website. Meaning nobody is going to go through the name, the threat unknown, threat unto, the page, all that stuff. But all my, if you go and you try to buy something from my site, automatically expect that you're using a mobile phone for a browser once you get into the checkout. Make sure that the number of loops that you have to go through the checkout process is accessing my site from mobile phone. So this is short, when you're sending people out to buy something on the site, the effectiveness is going to allow you to pay for stuff that's not on my phone. That's really important. Way to do this type of strategy is like a website and optimize mobile. And buy stuff from yourself on your phone. Make sure that you just go through user experience. That's really cool. That's why I really go buy stuff from yourself. Don't overuse it. People can start to get annoyed if you text them too much. And then as I mentioned, you can include natural drives. So for example, when I tell people
you want to make sure, again, that you use the right conventional, that you're talking about people who are going to be watching the time, and the driver on my iPad.
video. You don't have to put it on the commerce page. For example, I can open my stuff through YouTube. I create videos on YouTube and then drive people back to my product via the video that I made. I didn't have that video on my checkout page. This is something that I have to do. If you just want to do copy med videos like I do, and honestly, like, my videos are super, super cheap. I've got almost a million views on YouTube using basically this little $100 that I made. And I put that VIA camera, Sony Bluetooth microphone, also running right there to record the talk to my laptop, to the back that I'm really afraid. I've got I'm using a computer. I'm going to submit either to mobile or traffic editor, blasting the video out to 100 gigabytes. So you can go all the internet, you can use the video, track the number of views that it gets. Super easy way to put together like a quick video for you. This is just a video for you. I'll do structured videos in my garage. We're talking about being able to record it out. Another way you can do it, this is the way I actually have done some really good sales on websites that don't even have any offers. They're going to have a picture of me and video. And they use PowerPoint presentation. Like showing you guys PowerPoint presentation right now. And then I use screen capture app for presentation. Like captures everything showing up on my screen. And so I'm talking over and showing the PowerPoint presentation. And I've been holding $50,000 launches of products just by showing a few performance videos. Sometimes longer for me to walk into the PowerPoint presentation with a call to action first. For some reason, it works. People watch it and it can work better than I did the talking head that I did. For example, those type of pages, you know, there's one that I did, you can see it at tinygirl.com/URL, but thrivers.com is another example where I have the PowerPoint presentation page that I did, where it's just using it to talk. But that kind of marketing can really work. Not so much in the product business, as far as like price of the cheap stuff like that, if you're putting the product to us and stuff like that, that's really good to go. It's just Camtasia PowerPoint. Okay, if you want to learn how to do that stuff, like the videos that can make a lot of money in terms of like the 1, 2, 3 weeks that you want to create a description, right? The video boss.com is really good for that. Like, more affiliation with that, that's whatever. Okay, so I know I just covered a bunch of stuff. I always like to leave lots of time to Q&A. What I'll say here is, as long as you guys know.